That's been my biggest problem with podcasts, is a signal. But kind of awesome about doing this one in person.
Yeah.
If I do more of these, that'd be great, especially if this works out well.
Yeah,
because what happens is I'll do these, and 20, 30 minutes into it, it'll start getting glitchy. And the audio will start skipping, the video will start skipping, the video dropping pretty late. Which is why our podcast productivity has not been as high as I would like it.
What do you do for a living? That allows me.
Now we manage some investments.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and 100% that is technically my occupation, although it drains hundreds of thousands of dollars from me. Probably continue to do so until we figure out a way to start doing sponsorships and partnerships and advertising. Maybe put on live events to create some sort of revenue, release a book.
Yeah.
Those kind of things.
And it's great for us. Have you heard the Bucket List family?
Yeah, my wife follows them.
Yeah, yeah. So
I thought I was big time, but I saw how much he sold for, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Well, because I was like, what do these people do that they're able to just do this? They make it just look like, they make it look so easy.
They have a whole crew. They film crews. They have private trainers.
Oh, I was like, what is this guy doing that allows him to do this? And I guess he created the facial recognition software, Snapchat,
yeah,
or something.
Like one, I think it was one of them.
Somehow.
I think they sold for 50, 40.
That's cool.
You're the tattoo husband.
Yes.
What else? What do you do? Like, what is the page? What do you do for a living?
So I'm the tattoo husband. Kind of the backstory. So my wife and I met on a mission trip called the World Race, where you go to 11 different countries in 11 months. And so she just felt like this message that was put on her heart that she needed to use coffee as a vehicle to help women get out of sex trafficking. And so we got home from this mission trip, and we knew nothing about coffee or anything. And so we weren't even married yet. And so we got married about 8 or 9 months after this trip. We didn't know anything about coffee. So we were like, let's open up a coffee shop. Well, it costs a lot of money to open up a coffee shop, and we had no money. And so we're like, well, okay, if we can't have people come to us with coffee, then we will go to people with coffee. And so we created basically this coffee pop-up shop. That was great, but it was not profitable at all. And so we were like, okay, how do we make this a little bit more profitable? And so we just went full-scale coffee subscription. Kristen and I, we were butting heads, kind of both being the bosses. I said, listen, I'm just going to be your biggest fan. You take this. I'll just do the social media. And I knew nothing about social media at that point.
That was a smart call, marriage-wise.
Yeah. I was doing the social media stuff. I just kind of learned some practices, listened to a lot of stuff, trying to figure out what was working, what wasn't working for social media. And the social media, for it was called Sweet Aroma Coffee. It was blowing up. And so I was like, well, shoot, if this works for this, then I want to try it for my account. So, or whatever, my first Instagram account was called, turned into the Tattooed Husband. So I started being more creative and more intentional about branding was about 7 years ago. And that was when Instagram was kind of the wild, wild west, where you could, right, you could just like grow like crazy.
Like with TikTok is today.
Totally. Yeah. With the coffee company, it was acquired by another coffee company for our subscription model. That was kind of the genesis or the birth of the social media stuff. So if anything, the coffee stuff could have been the reasoning behind all the social media stuff, the growth and the learning of that.
Okay.
because it's been such a great source of income since then.
So you started off in coffee,
mm-hmm,
learned social media,
yeah,
because of coffee.
Yeah.
Got good at it.
Yeah.
And now jettisoned away coffee.
Yeah. So I do the social media stuff. I've always done the social media stuff. And then, and kind of in the interim, in the last 6 years, we transitioned a lot. We moved a lot. We were really restless after that mission trip. And didn't really feel like we didn't know where we wanted to be. And so we moved to California twice. I used to work in pharmaceuticals for a while, but I knew if I'm doing this in 30 years, I will have wasted my life. And so what was really important for me and what I value is really freedom to choose what life looks like and really to make life happen rather than life just happen to me.
Sure.
I got out of pharmaceuticals, moved back here. We were going to move to South Africa to work with the ministry, ended up imploding. And so we ended up staying here and we helped plant a church here locally. We were pastors, student pastors for a while, transitioned out of that and focused fully on social media for about a year and a half or two, managing people's social media, growing it for them, think that it was very lucrative for us. And then as I began to see changes happening, maybe a client would drop off here or there, growth began to get harder and harder. I was like, okay, I need to just plan a little bit for the future. And so I began to seek out other opportunities, other options. I didn't want to stop doing social media, but I did want to not fully rely on it when it's so unpredictable. It's like renting. It's like building a house on rented land, because at any point they could pull the plug and it could be dead. And then what?
I feel about Instagram right now.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. So, and that's what I mean. And I've had my account stolen, and I've had it blocked, and I've had it deleted. So I was able to kind of through some friends and connections, found out about a company in Southern California. They create roundtable peer groups for Christian CEOs and business owners, because there's a level of empathy that
is that like a C7 type thing.
Well, there's something called
C12.
So it's like C12. It's called Convene. I was actually talking to somebody today about how we're different in some ways, but same in some ways. Peer groups for Christian CEOs, it's super isolating to be a business owner. And then you add a faith component to that, and it's a whole other level of isolation. So we went out there and we worked for them in an office. And for the last, prior 5.5-6 years, I was my own boss. I'm an independent contractor. Kind of had the freedom to go and as I please, and didn't have anyone telling me what to do. Sure. And so then I tried.
So what role were you doing?
Business development. Okay. So helping them grow these groups, connecting with members, and actually.
So you were finding memberships to join and finding leaders to lead.
Yeah, but more specifically members. So there's somebody else, and it's a small team. There's like 8 of us, and then we serve like 600 or 700 members all over the United States.
So I've always liked the idea of that, because mm-hmm. That's something I always tried to build on my own. But business owners, other guys, because I tried to do a few different Bible studies, but everyone's got busy lives. Wednesday nights don't work for him. Wednesday mornings work for him. Yeah. Tuesday, but then when it comes to it, hey, this came up, so I can't make it. And so it's always been a struggle to get dads or guys together consistently.
Yeah.
And I found out I'm a C12 one-to-one of theirs. And I was like, these are people. This is what I've been looking for. Like, there's a personal element to it. These are smart, successful businessmen. Yeah. And then they told me, I forget how much it was. I think it was like $15,000 a year.
Yeah, it's like a couple of grand. It's like a grand a month, and so it's like the difference.
I'm like, oh, well, like how much? Like, how much else come to my house?
Yeah. And so, but a lot of people don't have that ability to find that community. And so, when I talk to people and they say, "Listen, I have a group of guys that I'm already meeting with," and that gorilla, I'm like, "Great, then Convene might not be for you." But if you don't, you feel isolated, and you feel like you can't find people who can relate with you from a professional standpoint and a biblical standpoint, and that's really hard to find.
Because there's real discussions when you're a business owner of, how do I manage these employees?
Right.
How do I deal with these customers?
Yeah.
And still in an integrity way.
Right.
Not everyone. Because I've had real discussions with other business owners where it's kind of screw the employee's attitudes.
Right.
They're the slave, you're the master. Yeah. Kind of relationship.
Yeah.
Protecting with customers of like, and they think that's good business. And I've always been very opposite of that. Like, not necessarily like 100% transparent, just like the intent of everything to be genuinely good for the customer. Because without the customer, you're in business.
Yeah.
And, and genuinely like the employees, like you have things you need to do. Like there are criteria that need to be met. And we're going to like strictly enforce those things. But at the same time, you're a person, you have a family you want to see.
Yes.
You want to be somewhat happy at work. And that was always, as a business owner, my biggest struggle about my communication with employees and the way I managed was never, now that I reflect on it, I could have been so much better. Because I just had a habit of, when things were not going well, when an employee was struggling, I would just kind of clamp down. And I was under the impression that business or employees should almost operate and act as if they were the business owner. Because that's how I always did.
Yeah.
When I was a teenager working for Cece's Pizza, like I wanted Cece's Pizza to be like the best pizza place in the world. And like if I was gonna make a pizza, it was gonna be amazing. If I was gonna do dishes, like dishes were gonna be perfect.
Yeah.
Like I was gonna show up early, I'd stay late. If we needed to do a deep clean at night, I'm your man.
How many people like you then? because
yeah,
not necessarily working at CC.
And that's, well, yeah, I was a teenager. Yeah. I always had that expectation. Look, and now that I've sold and I've kind of sat back and reflected on it, I was like, this is not how businesses treat their, they're not the owners.
Yeah.
And I think it took me having an exit like I did to sit there and say, yeah, they didn't get the benefit of that. Like the reason although I did it for other employers,
yeah,
like personally, I'd rather, A, I'm a minority in my personality.
Yeah.
But B, yeah, they don't have the ownership.
No.
So they don't have that benefit of building your net worth. And so to an extent, yeah, they get to check out and go home and just leave their troubles.
Yep.
And like, if you can foster that environment to where we get things done and not have that expectation that they should be that 100% in that you want and treat it like it's an ownership, I probably should have done a better job of doing that, fostering environment. Or, you know, we tried at the same point. Like it was about your family and things like that. But also, you know, hey, that work needs to be done. You're going to be here till 7 or 8 doing it, or you need to come in at 4 o'clock in the morning. But that needs to end. That would probably too. Okay. And when things would go south, I would just bear down harder. I saw a performance not meeting up to expectation. I would micromanage because there was a need for it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm just that.
Yeah. I'm trying to control. Sure.
And I'm more of an aggressive personality to where if someone talked to me the way I talked to them, like it's just fact. It's not in much consideration for feelings. Because we're addressing a real issue that needs to be fixed, and I'm just not thinking about feelings. Because if you told me real issues that face, I'm not. It's not an insult to me personally. It's just okay. Those things need to be fixed. But like, I realized after.
People
take that personal. Like, it hurts feelings.
Oh,
and those matter.
Professional world and then Christian world. If you join a Bible study or a small group, almost no other business owners in that small group or that Bible study or whatever it is, and say, listen, I'm hemorrhaging $50,000 a week and you need to figure this out. And people are going to pray for you. And that's incredible. And that's what you need. But it doesn't solve your $50,000 a week hemorrhaging problem.
Right.
And so to surround yourself with people who are also, who are business leaders who can help you figure that problem out in a way that you don't have to compromise your faith or your integrity or your values is incredibly valuable. So that's what we moved to Southern California for. We're driving in to California. My wife and I both thought, what in the world did we just do? Why do we move all the way away from family? Why are we here? And this was October of 19 that we had moved. And so right before the pandemic kind of hit the fan. We were there at about 3 or 4 months in. I began to have conversations with the executive team saying, hey, listen, I love working with Convene. We can't stay here. And there are a couple of reasons. I love Convene and I want to keep working with you all. But what was really hard for me is that I had traded all of this freedom for going into an office, 8 hours, 8, 9 hours a day, and then fighting traffic on the way to and from.
What parts of that?
So, Orange County. So we were in Orange County. Yeah.
It's like worst traffic.
Yeah. It was awful. Spending 8 hours away from people that matter most to me, driving 1.5 to 2 hours total per day as well. So I'm spending a third of my day away from the things that matter most to me.
Yeah.
And a third of my day turns into a third of my week, month, year, life.
That's just a fair thing from a father's standpoint.
Yeah.
Because that travel, and like what you did and what so many people, I mean, on St. Augustine's a great place to live, work in Jacksonville,
right?
Hour to Jacksonville, hour back. Like, you're living somewhere for a quality of life and you're working for a quality of life.
Yeah.
And man, so much time. I hated driving so much. I had an office that was 7 minutes away and I moved to an office that was 4 minutes away. That's how much I hated driving.
Yeah.
And then to go to Jacksonville where we had clients and everything, yeah. I did not enjoy it. But I think it's a real thing about it. To consider is how much time they're spending in the car.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people, and I don't know why, you clearly don't. You know when you seem to have an assessment of, hey, I'm doing this thing, it's working well. I'm starting to taper a little bit. You have no problem cutting and going to the next thing.
Right. Actually, my personality prefers it. I love starting new things.
Because you've already mentioned it 4 times.
Yes.
Just in this
conversation. Yes. Uh-huh. So I love starting things, but I get bored.
Sure.
And it's exciting for me to start new things. And so,
but even for some, not with that of the father, you know, if my opinion, if we're spending that much time in a big one, that's a pain point for you.
Yeah.
Like you're not stuck in a job. You're not stuck in that place.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's other jobs out there. They hired you. They like you enough to keep you at least.
Yeah.
Someone else will hire you. And maybe there is that remote position.
Mm-hmm.
And something like I couldn't remote. Like I love being at home.
Yeah.
But working at home for me is very difficult.
Yeah. And that's what I hear a lot. And we've had friends who, because of COVID, were engineers and they had to come home and work. and it was almost too much for them to work at home, where that's kind of all I've known for most of my career. And so it was a small, like 9 to 10 month stint of going from leaving everything I knew, of working from home, being in the midst of the chaos, if you want to call it that, with kids at home and wife at home and dogs and all those things, and then going to this office setting. And I go, this is not what I want.
Yeah.
And so what I think a lot of, I knew it wasn't what I wanted because I knew what I did want. And I know that sounds kind of silly, but something that we asked ourselves, or what are we passionate about? What does our heart break for? What does success look like? And we really asked ourselves.
And you had that real discussion at the moment, or is this in retrospect? That,
we had this conversation the first time we lived in California, and we were transitioning out of the pharmaceutical world and trying to figure out what was next.
Okay.
We asked those questions in that order, because if you ask yourself to define success before you know what you're passionate about and what your heart breaks for, then success will be skewed to probably more of what the world wants you to think success is. Could be. And so, but if you have locked in what you're passionate about, what your heart breaks for, what you truly believe is freedom, then
regardless of other people's opinions.
Yes.
So what does success look like for you if you don't care if your mom says that's stupid?
Right. Yeah.
You don't care if your friends are like, you're an idiot for them.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And because I mean, I even like to say too, we have gone up to the plate and we've struck out multiple times, but we've also hit it out of the park a couple of times as well. But we have so many friends who kind of, one, are a little bit envious of our ability to, and our willingness to make changes, because their highest values are most likely security.
Sure.
And rightly so, they want to take care of their families and these things, but so they get stuck in a job that they don't like, but they're too afraid to leave it.
Which drives me crazy, because it's so much of your time.
Yeah.
Same thing with like the travel thing, like leave.
Yeah.
Find another one. Like, I understand, you know, like, don't quit today.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah, what's, yeah, but create a plan. Yeah. 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 And so, exactly right.
Because I would rather make less money. If I'm making $70,000 a year, you know, working an hour away, not being happy, or working close by, just not being happy.
Yeah.
I would rather make $50,000 a year, make adjustments to my lifestyle, and be happy in something that I spend so much time.
Right. But if you don't know that, like if that's not clear to you, and you don't know truly what you value, because you haven't been able to hash that out, then that's very hard to see. And so, Kristen and I, my wife, we were able to hash out: these are our values. This is what we view freedom is. This is what we envision for our life as a family. And then we were able to kind of filter situations and decisions through that. Something about working from home is that I have the option, the ability to be interrupted, to have lunch with my family, to take a break and wrestle with my kids for 5 to 10. Like, I love being interruptible, and I love being there for my kids and feeling accessible. And that's something that I hated working in an office. I was just away. I just wasn't there. I didn't know what was happening in their lives on a daily basis. I was being caught up. I was gaining weight. Kind of long story short, they said, yes, you can move back to Tennessee and work remote.
Was there any thought to stay in California and working remote? Like, there,
no,
told you.
No, there wasn't enough there. We were far away from family. Cost of living was crazy.
No, was there an adjustment in salary?
No.
Okay, so they paid you California wages for living in Tennessee.
Or
were they paying you Tennessee wages?
Yeah, they became a contractor, because shareholders have to pay taxes in every state that there is an employee. And so I became a 1099 contractor.
Okay.
High value for us to be that close to family. Cost of living wasn't, like, we had an 800 square foot townhouse, no yard, 2 beds, 1.5 bath, and we're paying $2,300 a month. Now, our mortgage here for this, it's 3,500 square feet, is far less than that. And so it was just like, this is the long term, and as controversial as this sounds, our youngest daughter was vaccine injured. So she had a terrible reaction to, she had a terrible reaction to the MMR, mumps, measles, whatever, injection, vaccine, whatever you call it. So she was totally fine, and then she got that, and then she immediately became, allergic to gluten, processed sugars, dairy. She would get these terrible rashes under her arms that they would bleed.
How long did that take after the MMR vaccine?
Maybe 2 weeks.
All right, so we're not talking COVID vaccine.
Correct.
Any drama related.
Yeah. So she had that allergic reaction. And so for us and our family, we're not anti, we're just pro.
Oh, so it's permanent.
Well, so it was, but we were able to reverse it through some kind of holistic and homeopathic medicine, which kind of sounds a little weird. And it was weird for me because I just kind of.
I'm assuming that's like small introductions of the allergic stuff.
Yeah.
Until you feel the power.
Yeah. And it's like alternative medicine. Nothing spooky or weird. I was really hesitant. I'm skeptical by heart. And I'm always questioning motives. And I'm like, is this real? Or is this just like some voodoo stuff? But it worked. And so you would touch gluten to her lips and an hour later she's projectile vomiting. And so she would be projectile vomiting 7 times a week. And it was really confusing.
Because that's not a normal allergy reaction.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
So for us and our family, we decided we're not going to do any more vaccinations like for our kids. And so for some.
Yeah, that's an experience that
and if you've not experienced that, then like you probably will just go ahead and get the, it, like for our oldest, she's had far more shots than our youngest because she didn't have any allergic reaction. But in California, there were no like medical or religious exemptions to put our kids in school. You had to be fully vaccinated to be in school. It just wasn't worth the risk for us. And so we just knew long term, the only way to get an exemption is if the vaccine caused death or seizures. And then.
So if my kid dies,
then you're exempt. Yeah. Okay. Then you're exempt. Yeah. Go ahead. So.
He said, well, do you have a policy against corpses?
Yeah. Just after 7 days. So we decided long term, this just doesn't make sense for us.
Okay.
And
back to Tennessee.
So back to Tennessee. So here we are.
Always this region, Knoxville?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And so we have, my wife was kind of the boss of the coffee stuff. And like I said, it transitioned. And so what we've learned over the years is that, one, I'm a dreamer, I'm a visionary, I love to start stuff. She's really passionate about being a mom and being a stay-at-home mom. And she's really, really good about helping me see the details that I'm not seeing. And so we just kind of switched those roles over the years where I'm the boss, if you will, and she's helping me to stay organized and structured.
That's nice.
And so what we do now, really, we have 3 businesses.
Okay.
One being social media marketing, collaborating with brands and partnering with brands in order to promote their products.
Okay. That's, I'm assuming, the tattooed husband.
That's the tattooed husband stuff. Yeah. So I don't manage anyone's accounts anymore or anything like that. It's just strictly,
So what is the content on tattooed husband?
So it's really focused around 3 things, family, faith and coffee.
Okay.
That's what it is. And so if it doesn't fall within one of those 3, then I'm probably not going to post about it.
Okay.
And so that helps me to figure out who I'm going to partner with, what brands I'm not going to partner with.
I remember my wife was looking at it. She's like, he is way better at this than you.
He's clearly more artistic and creative. I can help you. I can help you. He's not a tool charger.
I just don't know how. There's a lot of things I could be doing, but and living in an RV, touring, and traveling, and moving all the time is not conducive for a good working environment.
Well, I think you have the ability to create a ton of really cool content because of your unique lifestyle.
Yeah.
But it's also the last thing on your list.
Yep.
And that's the way I've always helped. I've helped people who are looking to grow, but it's the last thing on their list. They know it's important, but it's, I mean, it happens to me too. Like there will be times when I go 2-3 weeks without posting because I'm doing so many other things and I'm just not thinking about my own account and things like that. So it's totally
one of those calendar programs, like, a Sprout or a Hootsuite or something like that.
Yeah.
There's others. Would probably be smart for
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
And so I'm probably going to do that so I can do it in bigger chunks.
Yeah.
So that way there's a little bit more
consistency. Yeah. So Kristen really helps me to strategize and plan out all the content we need to create. She'll help me create the content, tell me when to post it, all of those things. Because for me, I'm really good at landing the deal. And then after that, I just, like, that's the exciting part for me. And so it's really easy for me to just kind of fall away and go, I'll get to it when I get to it. So she helps me.
And that's almost the drudgery.
Yeah, that's right. So we do that. And then through the business development stuff with Convene, I've actually started a business development strategy company, I guess you would call it.
Okay.
So I do.
So we've got social media.
Social media.
That's
yeah.
one.
Uh-huh.
Now we've got
business development strategy. So I help multiple clients with business development. Okay. With sales generating more leads.
So this is like brick and mortar type businesses.
Yeah.
B2B.
Yeah. So one of them is can be their client of mine now. Another one being a video production agency.
Okay.
And I help them get more leads, land more clients. And then another one being they do CPA and bookkeeping services.
Okay.
For large Amazon sellers. So I have social media. I have that. And then we started a small rental car company. Probably 6 months ago.
I about to say, you have an excess of cars to people.
Yeah. My daughters are 6 and 4 and each have a car. So we have a number of cars. Some of them are here, some of them are not. And we rent them out to tourists as they come through Knoxville, and they usually just take them to the mountains most of the time. And then,
and that's through one of those big, like, I know there's rental car sites, like, an Airbnb for cars.
That's right. Yeah. So there's one, like, big one's called Toro.
Okay.
And so we just had an extra car. And so,
like, and now you're buying cars too, Doug.
That's right. Yeah. So we started with one, and we said, man, this is like, we have this car. Let's just put it on there and see what happens. So we put it on there.
How long you know that?
Since June.
Oh, new. Okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't do it and then get walled by COVID because no one could own it.
Yeah. So we started in June and we had one car.
So that's a leap of faith, I'm assuming. Well, I guess you could sell it.
Yeah. With car.
Are you buying them like on 5-year notes? Are you paying cash?
No, we are buying them on 5 to 6 year notes.
Okay.
We're using the bank's money. Yeah. So it wasn't really a big risk. One, because we already had the first car just to test it out. And so I would say, unless you have a really flexible schedule, it's not really for you because it's not.
Because people are making off the air.
Sometimes.
So there have to be people here.
Most of the time, we're taking the car somewhere. So unless you have a really flexible schedule, it's also not passive income either. It's a lot of work.
Sure.
We had someone crash into our house with one of our cars. So you get some crazies. Just like you would with an Airbnb house or something like that. We've had some crazy. Most of the time, people are nice and good. But
some people, when they rent, they bring their own insurance.
Yes, through the app, and then we have super insurance.
So what's the priority on that? I know with insurance, they're always like, hey, it's not us, it's the other insurance company. So is there like an established priority to, is the renter's insurance? Versus your insurance versus, I guess, here, the homeowner's insurance when they crash with your house.
Yeah. So thankfully, there was a minor damage to the car and up to the house. They hit brick with the bumper.
Oh,
it was $200 for this.
Oh, yeah.
Toro, you're covered through Liberty Mutual.
So they had their own
car. They have their own insurance. So we have four cars we're doing it with now. We haven't been doing this for a year yet, so we don't know what the slow season is. I'm imagining it's January, February. Because it's after the holidays, it's gray, it's rainy here. Yeah, so we'll find out. So I would rather have less and figure that out rather than having a ton of cars and figure that out. So
right, yeah, because I guess, yeah, if you have slow 2 months and you have, you know, 10 $300 payments to make, coming up, super fun.
Yeah, but those three things have kept me very, very busy.
Yeah.
But that's how I thrive.
Sure. It's very entrepreneurial style of keep you from getting bored.
Yeah. And so I've actually had a coach me recently and helped me to kind of sync all of my calendars and all of my emails. Because I have like 26 tabs open at all times on my computer. And so I've got it down to like 5 or 6 tabs. And then all my calendars sync to one calendar. And I'm realizing I have a lot more free time than I thought I did. But it was just so overwhelmed. It felt like I didn't have room to breathe. And so I'm not looking to really add anything. But it's nice to see that I do have breathing.
It's an interesting one I get completely.
Yeah.
Super enjoyable.
Yeah.
It is chaotic. It is hectic. There is pressure. Very real pressure.
And it's risky.
Yeah.
And so I think
there's probably a little pit in your stomach sometimes of like, what if?
Mm-hmm.
And then every entrepreneur, because I heard someone describe entrepreneurship as you feel like you're on top of the world 1,000 times a day, you feel like the world's falling out maybe 1,000 times a day.
Yeah. Yeah, when it's good, it's good. And when it's
a roller coaster of emotion all day long.
I know. But, it's funny. That's what I enjoy, and what all of that allows me to do is prioritize my values and be home with my kids and with my.
Because even when you're working, your presence is still in the home.
Right, and that's important. That's important to me.
That's how mine is.
Yeah,
and that is important to me. I can't do it.
Yeah,
I just I don't work as productively, especially in the RV, just because. you know, you're in, what, 3,500 square feet?
Yeah, yeah.
I am in 420.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I was talking to somebody. I was like, imagine the biggest RV you can.
Yeah.
It's still really small.
Or,
yeah. That was a little bit off. There it is. You found it. And it's still really small. So,
it's a wonderful home life.
Yeah.
It's just, I cannot be as productive as I once was. And yeah. You know, and I've played with different things of like, oh, shoot, I'll just work from like 9 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, then I'll sleep until like 10 or 11. But, you know, the family really, this is such a lax days of life. So they really don't get until like 10 or 11. You know, yeah. It comes up and everything with like slow breakfast, casual, and playing with toys, reading books, reading Bible stuff, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I'm slowly getting breakfast.
Yeah.
Everyone's just getting homeschool, kind of just doing their thing. But yeah, I just don't get work done well. Like, I'm ADD, so like my peripheral vision is picking up the morning. If it really bothered me that much, I stopped doing it.
Yeah.
And we go home. Or we do 1 month stays places, and I'd rent like Regis Bay somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm okay with 100% growing slower.
Yeah.
And having walls in each case. Because just because I'm.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying this time of life.
Yeah, yeah.
And separation is good for me.
Yeah,
having a routine is good for me.
Yeah. This is separate enough. Like having an office with the closed doors of the house,
3,500 square foot, especially with the perspective of like 420 now. This is, you know, I can't imagine Mark Cuban has anything bigger.
I'm just super grateful. Super grateful to kind of be in this situation.
Yeah, fun life.
Yeah,
it seems like a fun life.
Yeah, I think that's important to me. Because by the time I was 16, I didn't live with either of my parents.
Really?
Yeah. So they moved out. So kind of.
And you stayed in the house?
I did. Yeah. So kind of an
issue. Tell me how that works.
When I was 16 or 17.
Parents moved out.
My parents moved out.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. My parents got divorced when I was 12, and
this is a stranger.
Yeah. Well, they didn't live together. But okay. Yeah. Yeah. Got divorced when I was 12. My mom moved out and went to an apartment somewhere because she couldn't afford the house that we were living in. Both my parents kind of went kind of off the rails, kind of went a little crazy. So my mom quickly became an alcoholic and went crazy. Started dating. Kind of a combination of bikers and drug dealers and biker drug dealers. And so, it wasn't like the most ideal, atmosphere to grow up in.
I see why you became a Christian later.
Yeah.
Like, that probably appealed to you, that stability. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I felt very second place to everyone in my life, and I felt very, unseen and neglected. And it's funny because my sister, who's 4 years older than me, has kind of a much different perspective on our upbringing, but I think, I mean, that's a 4 years.
How old was she?
So
when they got divorced, you were 12.
Yeah, so she was 16. So, okay, my sister kind of went.
Sure.
Kind of went crazy.
Yeah, the entire life of everybody was.
Yeah.
Thrown upside down. But 12 is probably
the least favorite age.
You don't want to look. You probably one or two. It's you almost don't even know.
Yeah.
But yeah, those younger ages, especially in the middle, where
So yeah, my mom went that route, and then my dad just started like kind of dating everything in sight.
Sure.
And then he kind of
bring him around the house.
No. So thankfully not. But well, I mean, he was constantly going on dates and things, and then even later on.
So I guess what was custody with your dad or with your mom or split?
Split. Okay. So they never went to court for it. They just. We were cordial enough to go, hey,
But you were very aware your dad was going out. Thanks.
Yeah. And very aware of my mom and of all of that. And I became very bitter, very angry.
Sure.
And so I oftentimes say my rebellion, because what I saw my parents going through, I kind of committed to a life of sobriety. And I was like, alcohol, drugs don't seem appealing.
They set the example for what you don't want to be.
Right, yeah. And my parents really were, I don't know if I would call them atheists, but they found religion laughable. And so I would say my rebellion ultimately was, they might be. I don't know. But I would say my rebellion was diving into faith and exploring that. As well as sobriety. And so I kind of committed to like this straight edge lifestyle for a very, very long time.
So now, how old are you now?
31.
Okay. So have you ever felt the pull to give up on the straight edge and maybe try an in between, or even just going all out and going on a binger one day?
So that's interesting, because on my 31st birthday, I was like, okay, for some reason, I kind of feel safe enough and secure enough in who I am to try it. And so for my 31st birthday, I just had wine with dinner. And I was like, oh, I really like this. And
did you like the taste of it, or do you like the effects of it?
I like the taste of it. I like the way that it went with, like, paired with food. And I had one glass, and one glass for me was like half of a glass.
Sure.
And so I wasn't buzzed or anything like that. But I was like, oh, this is actually really nice. This is really great.
Sophisticated, different food profiles.
Right. Yeah, so since then.
And wine's tricky, because with different foods, it almost changes the way you taste the wine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of like wine tastings are kind of fun when they're paired. Not like the cheap touristy ones,
yeah, but like the good wine. Yeah.
It really changes the wine. I like it.
So I ended up trying it, and I liked it. And I said, okay, well, how do I enjoy this? And we had conversations, because so my wife, she was an alcoholic as well, kind of back in the day. And so she kind of committed to a life of sobriety as well. And so we're like, well, like, are we drinkers now? Like, what does this mean? Like, how do we, like, my identity was so wrapped up in being, like, alcohol-free Johnny that I really felt like I lost a part of who I was, because I had almost, quote-unquote, like, betrayed who I was. And so we had, like, these conversations about that.
Incredible awareness and ability to talk about that with your spouse.
Yeah.
Props to you. I wish more husbands and wives would get on that level.
Yeah.
Dig a little deeper into their psyche almost.
Yeah, it was really helpful for us, because from that we learned, no, like, we've seen it abused, but it doesn't have to be abused. And we need to make, like, if this helps us make the decision to whether or not we want to continue to explore this or to not. And there's not a right answer. It's just what's best for us.
Yeah.
And so we continue to explore it. And what I've learned is I've tried whiskey. I don't like it. White wine, it's fine. Like, I think I found what I liked, which is cabs. Once or twice a month, I'll have a glass of wine, and it's nice. And I can enjoy it and do it in a way that is...
And does your wife participate as well?
Yeah. Okay. Every once in a while, she will as well. And it's, like, safe, and it's healthy, and it's...
There's a little bit of accountability to keep it from becoming a slippery slope, maybe.
Totally. Yeah. And so it's been, like, a really healthy journey.
Jump back to your parents. Well, not your parents. One of your parents, I assume, left the house.
Yeah, so my mom left the house. I stayed in the house with my dad. Then my dad ended up moving. We all moved with my dad to a new house. My mom was kind of jumping from apartment to apartment. So I was in Orlando. My mom was dating someone in Brooksville, which is like...
Not a huge talent pool in Brooksville.
No, and he was not.
I never went from Brooksville, but you know it's true.
She was like always gone. You know, like she was there maybe at the apartment like once or twice a month. A week. And then my dad was seriously dating someone in Kissimmee, which is like 25-35 minutes away.
That's it. So they both were really living somewhere else, but kept their
homes. Right. Yeah.
You just eventually had a place yourself.
And so then my dad said, "Hey, listen, I'm getting married. I'm going to move into Yvonne's house," which is my stepmom, and they're still together and all that. So he moved to kind of near Disney.
And said you would keep the house, or you need to go live with your mom?
And he said, "How about we have your mom come move into this house so that you don't have to move?"
But meanwhile, your mom's really spending most of her time in Brooksville.
Right. Yeah. And then she, and the rent was like $400 a month or something. It was that thing. And she couldn't afford it. She was just spending. She didn't make very much money. She was spending money on the wrong things. She was never there. And so this is probably when I was like 14 or 15, I would say. For the next couple of years, like, my mom lived in that house. My dad lived 35, 40 minutes away. But my mom was never there. So just kind of me and my sister just kind of...
Okay. And your sister's over 18 at this time. She's 20.
Yeah. And she's in college.
Who's paying the rent?
My dad.
Okay.
So
I was waiting for the twist of you just said, "Dad, I'll pay for it," and got a job. Started your entrepreneur.
My entrepreneurial journey didn't start until probably 25. 26. Okay. And failed 10 weeks as well, but which I kind of talked about. But that's
yeah, failure is like the thing you need to do.
Yeah.
People look down on failure. You get mock scores judged, and everyone wants to hide their failures. And just that. I think only genuine entrepreneurs, where it's like ingrained. It's not, I want to be, and I wish I could do this. Like, it's your soul.
Yeah.
Those seem to be the only people that really genuinely feel that way about failure, of like, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, it's worth the risk.
It's just
based. Right. You gotta just dust yourself off.
Yeah. And they almost, like, this way, I almost like failure because it makes the ending so much better.
Yeah.
And like, so I like being able to tell stories of failure because it led me to now.
Yeah, exactly right.
Probably would suck more if it didn't.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why people get caught up in like this employee mindset. And
because it's safe.
Because it's safe, because it brings security. Yeah. You know where your paycheck's coming every 2 weeks. It's going to be deposited into your account.
It was also a hard-grained mindset from the previous generations. Well, work for the company, get your paycheck, get your pension, get your retirement, and that's your life.
Yeah. And I was actually listening to a podcast recently, and they said it used to be that high school would prepare you for your job, for your trade, whatever it was. And viable options were, hey, you're not cut out for college, so why don't we check out these options, trades, military. But what it's turned into is high school is really just training you for college. And then, we've coached and mentored a lot of high school students and college students, and we've told them, if you, you need to go to college if you are looking to be an employee. Like, that's because people just need to see that on your resume. Like, that's, if you are content with being an employee, then you must go to college.
And that's intention. That's something the education system, they bold and modified according to what society needs.
Yeah.
Society needs workers like that.
Yeah.
And so they create an environment to where you sit down, follow rules, listen to what I say, and be, you know, kind of robotic and not thought provoking.
Yeah.
That's what's great. That's one of the big reasons I like homeschool. It encourages an environment of thinking outside the box, of questioning everything, of asking why, and being able to go dig for that answer. Whereas in school, when you ask why, you kind of got in trouble for it.
It took up too much time.
This is the book. This is the paragraph I have to read to you, and that's really what we cover.
That's one of the big reasons why we homeschool. But like Kristen, my wife's little brother, he's 20 now. Instead of going to college, he's been learning how to day trade. And so he's been doing that for 2 years now. And he's learning and he's becoming profitable. But you don't need college to do that. And so,
in fact, right now the shift to make some seriously good money is blue collar trades.
Right.
Because for so long, now it's going to shift again.
Mm-hmm.
But because so many people have been told, it's not, don't work in the heat. Don't work with your hands. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Like, work in the AC, work with your brain, work smarter, not harder. That working harder is stuff. I mean, if you're an electrician and construction, name your price, whatever you want.
We've had a plumber come in. We've paid a ton of money.
Automobile tax, diesel tax, whatever you want. You'll be supposed to get good at it. And it's going to sweat, you know, once people figure that out and they're starting to, and that becomes really popular again, old schools will pop up.
Yep.
And, you know, hey, don't become diesel like they do, you know, welding things like that. Then that's going to become less valuable. It's just demand or supply and demand.
Yes.
You got a lot of them, price goes down. You got very few, price goes up. Right now, there's not a lot of people willing to work with their hands.
And so to kind of go back to living by myself, that's totally fine. At around 17 years old, my mom was never there. My dad was like, hey, Johnny, like, just help me out here. Trying to figure something out. Your mom is not keeping up with rent. And being 17-year-old Johnny, I said, kick her out. Get her out of here. She's never here anyway. It was a much longer conversation than that. But he was like, what? Are you sure? And I said, yes. And so we asked her to move out. And so she moved out of my dad's house.
So she really wasn't
even there. She wasn't even there anyway. So when she did move out, it wasn't like this big shock of like, bring my parents. It was like, I've been doing this for years. And so
it's really, you've been doing your own laundry.
cooking my own food, getting myself up for school, all these things. I mean, my grades, though, my senior year totally plummeted. Or junior year, senior year.
You were working also.
Yeah, TCBY, kind of best yogurt. Yeah. So that was, I mean, it wasn't bringing in the big bucks.
$8.25 an hour.
Probably, that's probably generous. But it was kind of like, my dad was like, here's a card, just kind of, this is for your needs. And so, for most of us, it sounds really nice, but for me, I was like, I just want a relationship with my dad. Everything that I've been talking about and what I value and why I love being at home, being interruptible and being here is because of all of that. And so that just shows me where my values are. I don't want my kids to ever feel like I'm not accessible.
So, and now it appears to me, which I already know you're going to do because you're involved, is not having, just like we were talking about supply and demand, not having the same thing happen again next generation by talking and sharing these stories with your kids.
Yeah.
Let them know the whys behind you, where you are, the way you are. So they aren't sitting there saying, man, my dad was there all the time. I'm such a pain. This is going to be horrible. I'm going to give my kids so much love for you.
Hopefully they don't feel that way.
Perspective.
Totally.
Is a thing. And obviously it's going to be an age appropriate release of information.
Yeah.
But I think explaining the whys and giving your perspective mm-hmm. is going to give your kids such an advantage of the world.
Yeah.
If you can combine, looking at a line, generations and generations of perspective and influence.
Yeah.
Thoughts.
Yeah.
You start off on such a higher pedestal in life.
Yeah. I think that all of that perspective. Yeah. There's a book called A Tale of Three Kings, and it's about King David, King Saul, and then Absalom, which is one of their sons. But part of the book basically says, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, with like story of those men or not, mm-hmm. but basically Saul was crazy. And then King David was hunted like a dog. But what the book says, God used Saul to kill the inner Saul in David. So it's kind of helping, like, he used the craziness of Saul to kind of root that out of the next leader. I'm hoping that's what
we learn from the past.
That's exactly right.
So we can have to start from scratch, figure out what life is for them, for what their kids are going to be. It's a real shame.
Yeah. I think that's kind of what it all comes down to. It comes down to recognizing where I lacked at growing up. And my dad's and our relationship has been reconciled. It kind of came to this point of, I don't think he's going to change, so I need to alter my expectations. I take a different approach to how I'm pursuing a relationship with my dad.
Yeah. I don't think it's not fair to expect anyone to change for you. It's unrealistic, and it's a little bit, say, narcissistic.
Yeah.
To expect people to change who they are.
Right.
For your preference.
Yeah. I think it just helped me. Like, even my mom, she didn't change. Like, she was still off the rails. But I knew, and I think a lot of my faith had to do with how I began to pursue relationships differently, recognizing they're not going to change, but I can, if I want that relationship, then I need to set my expectations a little differently.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think this through because I'm trying to think of good ways to phrase this because you don't want to, in a sense, get rolled over. And that's why I'm just trying to think of a way if someone's listening because it's good advice, but at the same time, it can be overdone. Mm-hmm. It's just like everything. There's kind of like it's a mess of gray areas. So you don't want to set yourself up to get hurt.
Right.
I guess it's creating boundaries because you're saying not change yourself, but change yourself a little bit or change your expectations.
I think because
I just wonder how that really looks.
I think you can.
For me, I set hard boundaries. I'm like, because that's just my mind. Yeah. It's like the way. Here's the fence.
Yeah.
Cross it, you're dead. Yeah. And that's probably not healthy. That's probably wrong. Right? It's just my
mind. It's not usually healthy. Yeah. Forgiveness doesn't necessarily mean they having 100% access to your life anymore. Sure.
So the take I have on forgiveness, because that was always a very difficult subject for me, at least for me, I've reached, because I can say I've forgiven you, but then I'm still harnessing like resentment and kind of hope you get eaten by a wood chipper.
Yeah.
It's when you don't feel ill will towards that person anymore. You don't want them to pay the consequences for what they did to you.
Right.
You don't feel the need for that justice to be served.
Yeah.
But at the same time, not letting being strong enough to, I guess, create those boundaries to where you don't allow it to happen again.
Yeah, exactly. And right.
It doesn't necessarily be trust.
Yeah.
Or fully trust.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Or just recognize, I mean, that would be, I don't know, can you call that stupidity? Of just like if someone hurt you in a way, and then you say, okay, I forgive you, I'm going to just give you full access.
Sure.
And then they, like, to hurt me again. Not that you should just become like this shell or this armored up person, but just recognizing, okay, I recognize my boundaries now, and I recognize that I can love you, but I can also withhold certain parts of my life from you.
Yeah, that's right.
For my emotional and physical health.
Yeah. You can't be trusted on that side.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so if I tell you a secret and you tell that secret to everybody, then I just know, okay, I need to forgive you, because they say bitterness is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Like, it's just, yeah. And so
that's those expressions I've always had trouble with,
yeah,
when I was in it, to like fully comprehend them, you know, cut off your nose, spite your face, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's something I always struggle with, just because, I mean, those people are living rent-free in your head.
That's right.
And it's so consuming, it's hard to give those expressions much weight when you're just like, yeah, but. Burgers.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that's
why I think counseling helps, because it's someone to kind of walk you through that stuff.
I call it gray spaghetti. So when it's in your head, because it's like just a bunch of noodles all touching. It's not black or white. It's just all in your head. So I'll tell people talk about it and then talk about it some more.
Yeah.
And then when you're tired of talking about it, talk about it some more.
Yeah.
Because when you begin to talk about the gray spaghetti, all the things in your head that are frustrating you, that are hurting you, that are living in your head rent free, it begins to be actually less complicated usually than it actually is.
Because the drama scene that unfolds in your head. Well, I was talking to one guy that, yeah, what he was mad about. He was just like, he would have these imaginary arguments in his head for hours.
Yeah.
Not quite like hours.
Yeah.
Not every day, but it was just like, he just kind of realized when he's like, this whole thing just went down with like tangents for me in these conversations. That whole argument just went down this path that was ridiculous of like how I was gonna, posture up or whatever. That guy didn't count like that. I thought it was a really good drug. Just occupied her out. He wasn't getting as much work done. He wasn't as attentive with his family. He wasn't able to do things that made him happy because he was having imaginary fights in his head.
Yeah.
But the other person doesn't even get to say, your brain's just making them say what you want them to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because your next comeback's going to be so great.
So good, yeah. The more you talk about it, the less control it has over your mind, I feel like. Because it begins to make more sense.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, this is actually isn't as overwhelming as I once thought it was.
And that's why the counselor probably plays a big role.
Yes.
Because you have to voice those things, and then you have a person looking at it from an outside perspective saying, does that really make sense?
Yeah. Which is so helpful.
Yeah.
So helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of counseling. I think that's why I've loved Convene, because it really provides that outsider perspective for a lot of people. I love the coaching aspect of
it. Which is a counseling in itself.
Right.
Because you can voice things and mm-hmm. other people's opinions are heard.
Yeah. So I think I just see the value in that, in talking things out. It holds weight in every part of my life. And I think that's why Kristen and I can talk about, well, should we drink? Is this who we are? Should we not? But it could be exhausting for the person who isn't wired that way to really over communicate. And so
So I make new decisions all the time, and it drives my wife crazy.
Yeah.
She's like, but this is the thought process you were on last week. I'm like, yeah, but things have changed.
Yeah, that was last week. So
I heard you are exhausting more time in my life than I care to admit.
Well, and Kristen has, she's learned that because I have an idea, so for a long time, she was like, oh no, how am I going to help him make this? She's like, how are we going to do this? I don't know. And so then she'd realize, okay, just let him talk. And then if something sticks, it'll happen. But for the most part, you don't have to.
I've got like 10,000 ideas every minute.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Sometimes I voice them, then I realize how stupid they are.
Yeah. Sometimes she'll tell me that's stupid. Well, it's good, which is helpful for me. But she's learned that my ideas are simply ideas until I really latch on to something. And then she can tell when it's when it's for real or when it's not. Yeah. So
around the 9th or 10th time of refusing it.
Yeah, she's like, okay, and that's how this carving thing came about. She kind of had the idea. She was like, okay. And then we began to get more serious about it. She's like, sure. And I said, I'm going to do it. She goes, okay, I trust you. And so we did. And it worked. And it was great. Nice. But we've also made a mistake. Like, we bought a car. And then after we bought it, found out we're not allowed to rent it out. It's because it had a manufacturer buyback. And according to like those websites, like rental car websites, they kind of view it as the same as like a salvage title, if you will. Carfax and VIN number and all that kind of stuff. So you have to put all that information in.
Okay.
Before. So
it's a tour of registers your vehicle as a rented vehicle.
Yeah, you kind of like on the Airbnb, how you put your house in. We bought this really expensive car. And
now you drive it. Your other car is now the rental.
Yeah, well, yeah. So my wife, we decided, because
you're not much of a choice.
All
there,
of our cars have turned into rental cars. It's just kind of on accident. So we got our van. We got our van and we're like, let's put it out and see what happens. So we put it on there and it starts renting immediately. We're like, okay, well, we'll get you a car that's not a van because you don't like the mom van life. So we got an Atlas. And so when she was driving there, we're like, let's just put it on there for a little bit, see what happens, put it on there, just booked instantly. And then we're like, okay, well, I guess you need a car now. And so we ended up getting this third car, and it's much bigger. It's and it has 3 rows. Found that, like, we'll just run it a little bit and cover the payment, and then you'll then we found out we couldn't rent it. We're like, well, shoot, this is a much bigger payment than we wanted.
Sure.
And so we ended up trying to sell it but couldn't, because most people, we didn't know what the manufacturer buyback was. And couldn't figure it out. We finally figured it out, but because of that, people didn't want to buy it. Found out it's just cracked windshield seals. That's all it was. And I felt really guilty. I was apologizing over and over again, and
screwed up.
Yeah, exactly.
And life goes on.
That's just kind of what we're like. Oh, we just screwed up, and now we learned it. So maybe a little gun shy to buy more cars. But that's
been literally my entire philosophy, my life of. So if we screw up, Russell Goldfro, so all of our companies just collapse.
Yeah.
Just utter collapse. We get destroyed. I don't know, and that would probably have to be a reputation thing.
Yeah.
Really collapse. But man, you know, as a kid, I mowed lawns.
Yeah.
We live in Florida. I was buy $150 Walmart. Yeah. Like, I'm mowing lawns every day.
Yeah.
Like that's the worst case scenario. We're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Failure is okay. Screwing up, you know. So that made taking risks a lot easier. Just, you know, you don't want the whole thing to collapse because that would be disappointing.
Yeah.
But life doesn't end. Like, the next day still shows up.
Totally.
Yep. Kind of like, fun, but like, I really don't like suicide. who does?
Yeah.
It's just one of the things. A lot of people are very sympathetic to it. And, you know, I am to an extent because, you know, if you're talking to somebody who's on the line, a lot of men leave, I think, statistically in suicide, especially fathers.
Mm. My pastor, he ended up killing himself.
I don't mind being a little bit more aggressive and meaner of saying that's stupid. Mm. Like, don't do that for the people. Yeah. Well, it's hard to like honor the, you know, the families that are left behind. Sometimes, you know, that I'm so sorry, but at the same time, let's help the next generation people that are left over. Like, this is stupid. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Like, tomorrow, however you're feeling tonight, tomorrow's a new day. I would have to like do research on what the stats are, but you know, if you're about to file bankruptcy or you did file bankruptcy or you're just an embarrassment as a failure,
yeah,
or you know, you had an affair and are about to be outed, that kind of pressure, you can't look like you're really, in 2 weeks, everyone's going to be talking about something
different. Yeah.
I mean, if you really pay attention to the news cycle, like a big thing, whatever Trump did, that was stupid, or whatever Biden did, that was stupid. A week or two, no matter how horrible and terrible.
It's Rittenhouse, right? Like, that's all, like, no one's talking about it anymore. Like, and that was a big deal.
Yeah, that was probably a lot of pressure on that kid.
Totally.
Some people in that equal amount of pressure might take that option out.
Right.
Now, you still probably have to live with it a little bit. 5 years from now, barely. But they're going to like research. Life does go on. There is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
It's not always a trend.
Well, yeah, I think you need people to walk with you through that. Because most, when you're at that point, I don't think it's as easy to see the light at the end.
No, of
end.
When you're in it, I think it's probably very difficult.
Yeah.
That's why.
Like you're drowning.
Right, that's why I'm like, I want that kind of ingrained in my kid's life. It's always ingrained, because it's not like I've never been borderline, maybe even actually depressed.
Yeah.
And sad. It's like I've never had a thought of what if.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's so ingrained in me that no, that's like this.
Yeah, it's not it, yeah.
So it's like pre-wired. As bad as it gets, the next day comes.
Yeah.
like as many butterflies as you're carrying, the next day comes, they're not as bad anymore. Yeah. Or maybe they are, but the next day after that.
So. And some of the best business advice I've gotten was from some of my friends who are in their 40s, I'm 31. And I said, what advice would you give yourself if you were 30 or 10 years ago, or when you were starting the business? And they said that you have so much time to completely fail. And start over multiple times. Like it's never. And so that was encouraging to me, because it's just like, and his encouragement was, take those big risks because it could lead to 100% failure. But you have so much time in your life, between now and then, whatever then is, to restart.
It's crazy to think, like, of the way I thought of a 30-year-old in high school and how ancient they were.
Yeah.
And like now being 30 made me like, I'm young. Are you kidding me? And I talked to other people that are like, you still feel that way at 40, 50, 60, 70, 80. Like there's 80-year-olds, as long as they're healthy,
yeah,
that are still like, yeah, I want to make this investment for the next 20 to 30 years.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. I'm going to look at like a Warren Buffett color that like late 90s.
And so both my parents had cancer. My dad had like so he had like colon cancer and he got it. My mom had bladder cancer. The difference between my mom and my dad is my dad goes to the doctor. My mom never went to the doctor.
So he caught it early.
Yeah, she caught it early. They got it taken care of. No sign of it. He was probably 57 or 58. He's 64, 65 now.
So you already going to have to get checked?
No, but I'm going to. So yeah. my goal is when between 32 and 35, I want to start doing all of the old man procedures and getting all the checks and prods.
So
it's better. Check it.
I wouldn't have thought myself as homophobic, but thought of a prostate exam.
Yeah.
Is just one I don't. I might have to be knocked out for it.
Yeah. I'm sure that's an option.
Yeah, of course it is. But those are anesthesia is really not as effective on redheads. And I've had other redheads say that they want like surgery for anesthesia or whatever, and then they went white within weeks.
That's funny that you say that, because I have heard, one, that redheads are one of the last demographics populations to be
amazing.
It'd be amazing, yeah. What's the word I'm looking for? Like racist against? I don't know what the word is I'm looking for.
Oh, yeah.
Or prejudice.
I have said this my entire life of like every one of you minorities that are complaining about racism, sexism, whatever. Yeah. All races, all ethnic, minorities make fun of redheads.
Yeah.
Absolutely cool. We are the truly oppressed people.
Yeah.
We don't like other redheads, to be honest. Like, yeah. I don't high school. I think my junior in high school or sophomore year, we did Battle of the Borders, so Florida versus Georgia. And I was like, yeah, I was a really good wrestler. And so, like, I was the captain of the team and, like, one of the leaders in the state. And this guy was, too.
Yeah.
He was a senior. I think I was a sophomore or a junior. And everyone was waiting to see these two redheads clash. And, like, I was so pissed. Like, I didn't want to touch him. I was disgusted by it. Like,
yeah.
And the fact that we were going to be, like, a circus act. It's like.
But I've also heard, too, that redheads actually have a higher pain tolerance.
Yeah. More sensitivity to light in their eyes. And anesthesia does more people. I gotta go to the dentist.
Yeah.
And, like, we just metabolize it so quick. I wish my metabolism worked that way. Yeah, like, they'll just inject so much freaking, what's that, Novocaine or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, and I'll still feel stuff. I'm like, just do the work. Like,
yeah.
I'll deal with it. I'm tired of it. Like, the dentist is, like, jamming the needle so far in to get more stuff in there that it's, like, squirting the back of my throat. I'm like, now you hit the gums out. Like, you want to the gums and they're squirting my throat.
Are you an MMA fan? Because of your wrestling background,
I went to WWE and wrestled, so like my coach is he's now a coach in MMA.
Oh, cool.
Greg Jones, who's a three-time national champion at WWE. Then my freshman year was the year after he graduated, he became the assistant coach.
Gotcha.
And then when they had a coaching turnover years later, he went out and he's actually down in Florida and does something with that. I'd say he's posting all the time. He's at that dog big MMA fight.
Yeah, he's in like South Florida.
He's a wrestling coach for.
It's like Stanford MMA.
But he's a wrestling coach there. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been in a fight. I would lose if I
get. But I don't watch them because they're usually pay-per-view. I'm like, yeah. Oh, that's my house, Mark.
Yeah. Let's watch the three in Thailand.
Notoriously.
Yes. Well, that's how you got to live in an RV. So,
yeah.
Down by the river.
Yeah. And so, I like stuff, but I don't need stuff. Mm. I do appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm a recovering from being materialistic. So
yeah,
I love things. So
my dad really liked watches, jewelry, and stuff, and so I just never. I think because of that relationship, I've always just been like I never want to watch.
Yeah.
Like, I wear this one wedding band. And it's very simple.
Yeah,
basic.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I, like, I don't want necklaces. I don't want study ring. You know,
get accepted for your start here.
Yeah. He likes like suits and like erotic stuff. And
yeah,
I'm just like, that was work harder.
Yeah, that's how you get to all of that. I've heard someone talk about, what do they say? Basically, the entrepreneurial journey, or like the business owning journey, it's like one of the benefits is you get to choose whether you want to wear suits to work or not, or if you want to wear sandals.
The freedom there is genuinely enjoyable.
Yeah.
I think, and I used to be of the mindset that like everyone should own their own. Like go, move on, whatever, start a restaurant, whatever it is, or food truck. I don't think that way anymore. I think it's a mindset that few people can handle. I think to put that burden on a lot of people would be a recipe for disaster. A, you have to be able to do everything. You have to handle consequences. You have to accept all blame and take it all on your shoulders.
Yeah,
and take the initiative.
Have the capacity. Yeah.
That would be, there was one time a few years before we sold that, like, crap hit the fan. We said the guy that was managing our business was stealing from it. And
dang.
When I figured it out, I was still willing to keep him on just because, like, I needed the person. I was willing to keep him on, but, like, since he knew, I knew. Never saw him again.
Wow.
And he had all my keys, like everything. I didn't see him one more time. I tried to find him at his house. And then there was a whole bunch of excuses about him, like, a small part and everything. Like, does it matter? Did he messed up? The hardest I've ever worked in my life. So I kind of got my seasonalities of life. Like, I'm a workaholic. I will spend a lot of time at work. I have to make an access to spend time with my family. It's probably why I'm overjoyed. I missed so much of traveling for years with my family. Nothing but that scene at 24/7. Because that stage, like, it just required everything from me to the point I was probably sleeping 2 hours. I would get home like 2 a.m., sleep for a couple hours, wake up at 4, go back to work because you had to. Like, it was all on me. I had to feed our entire database had to be rebuilt. The entire structure of our company. So at that point, we had just launched into micro markets, just basically built a convenience store. We would take out vending machines out of like a corporate hub.
Yeah.
We would take all the vending machines out, we would build a convenience store and a self checkout. And so, but like the entire inventory management system, the entire, all the procedures, the structure of everything, was all wrong. Like he had just half-assed everything and was just winging it. And like when I got into it, I was just literally had to redo everything. That was back-end infrastructure, structuring everything, physically getting on it. Cause we end up, in that business, where your inventory is. No clue where inventory is. I had to go to every single site. Every single candy bar, and we had hundreds of items. Inventory in the entire store. While everyone's like, some people are running out of things, some people just don't know.
Yeah.
And you know when to stop people based on when they're about to run out. And we didn't know. Like, yeah, this is, you have 30 cheeseburgers. We're out of cheeseburgers. It was such a nightmare. And it was just all on me. And so we were a two truck company with it. And yeah, so.
Wow.
That was like the craziest I've ever worked. And that was a couple weeks straight, like 2 hour sleep nights.
Wow.
That. And even then, I was like in my room, like tucked in the corner, just rocking back and forth. How is it? How is it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I found myself there probably a couple of months ago. I realized I was working so, so much. And because I had all these calendars, all these schedules, all these emails, all these tabs open, and I just felt so overwhelmed. And so it was a regular thing for me to take my girls out on dates, my daughters out on dates. I wasn't doing that. And so my daughters would be like, Dad, can we go on a date? And like, yeah, let me just figure out when. And they'd always ask me, kind of pester me, if you will. And then I realized, this is a terrible analogy. Have you heard of an analogy? Parallel. Have you seen Trainspotters?
Mm-hmm.
No, anyway, don't watch it. It's about heroin addicts. They kept asking me, and then my answer was just kind of putting it off. And then I realized there was silence, and they weren't, and it had been months of them not asking me. And I was like, oh man, now they don't have this expectation of me taking them out on dates. Like they just know it's going to be a no. And that's kind of what I knew. Even though I'm working from home, even though I'm accessible, I really made myself inaccessible. Something needed to change. Something needed to give. I had to restructure some things, get all my calendars, get my emails all in one place, all that, putting it on my calendar to take my daughters out on a date. So we've started doing
your wife too.
Yes. Totally. Yeah. And so I've learned the importance of that. I've just realized though I'm home, I'm still inaccessible, and that doesn't line up with my goals and my values. And so I had to.
There's ebb and flow of life. Sometimes you have to be all in home business. Sometimes you can be more with your family. Now that's going to be more of the small business owner, entrepreneurial type person. Obviously, if you have a more structured life, it's easier to create that structure. But for the business owner, I sit there and say, but then having your type of recognition where you can sit back and be like, oh man, I have left this neglected for too long. That needs to become the new priority. Right. And these things I've been focusing on and take a sidetrack for a little bit and put them on their own.
I think that's why it's important to know, and I've said this 1,000 times, but something that's been so incredibly valuable to me is to know what your values are and to know what freedom looks like, know what success looks like. Because if you don't, then life just kind of.
Have you written that down, or is that something that you and your wife just talked about?
No, we've written it down. We've shared it with other people as well. And so it's three sets of questions in a specific order. And those questions are, and for us, it had to deal with ministry and what ministry looked like. And so it was like, what does ministry look like? What does the world see ministry as? What does the Bible say ministry is? And then how do we see ministry? And so we would ask ourselves those questions. One of those three questions each week, individually, we journal about it. And then we would come together at the end of the week and to talk about it. And that would help us get on the same page. And then after 3 weeks of talking about ministry, then we would go to, okay, well, what is our heart break for? What are we passionate about? And where do those two things combine? Talk about, journal about those things individually for each question for a week and then come back together. And then after that, so we knew what we were passionate about, what our heart breaks for, we knew what ministry looked like for us. We knew what was true about what the Bible said about ministry and what was not true. There's very little in the Bible in regards to defining what ministry actually is. So it's pretty interesting. I was really surprised to find there's only three verses or something like that have the word ministry.
Yeah, I assume that would be all in Paul's stuff.
Yeah. So it's not. I don't know. I can't remember where it is now, but I just remember it not being as prevalent in the Bible as I thought it was. One's in Romans 11. I read it this morning. But what I've learned is that, and then the third set of questions, what is success? What does the world view success as? Sorry, this is how my brain works too. So what is success? What does the world view success as? And how do I view success?
Okay. We talked about it.
Yeah. And so when you asked about writing them down, we did write them down.
That's
and
good.
Always been a focal point for us and an anchor to say, okay, let's go back to these values, these passions, and this definition of success.
Right. So from a guy that's an entrepreneurial father, a husband, what's maybe one strong remark we want to make towards a business owner, dad?
I would say it's very important to have a support system.
What would a support system look like?
I think, so for me, it's my wife. She trusts me. She believes in me. She's very vocal about that.
Well, you guys have deep conversations.
We have very deep conversations. Yeah.
It's not a shallow level communication. It's, we'll get into the awkward, into the uncomfortable.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think clear communication, so everyone's on the same page, is really, really important. That would be the biggest piece of advice. And then I think balancing entrepreneurial lifestyle when you're balancing being a family man, you need to figure out what your values are so that you know what you need to sacrifice.
Sure. For busy dads that are really struggling with that, and I would assume if we're having this conversation, this dad wants to spend time with their family.
Yeah, I think
As far as that's concerned, you have that communication with your wife that you talk about. I think it's equally as important to have that conversation. It's young kids of hey, but when you need dad, just come tell me. Sometimes you just come up and say, hey, dad, can we go do something together? Because sometimes I just get so focused on something I forget. And it's not that I forgot, I'm just so focused on something. I need you to interrupt me every once in a while. I say, dad, it's been so long since we've done anything. I'm ready to do something.
Right.
And a wife is very good at saying, a long time since you've done with the kids. We're out of balance right now. You need a little more focus on here. And if you're doing a big product launch or something like that, or deep into coding a new venture, then, maybe it's a few more weeks of doing that coding, of doing that deep into the business, but then realize eventually you have to step back and make time for your family. You can't just be years and years and years and years of all in on the business, because then your family's going to raise up. Having that support structure where people can voice up, people can step up, and you will listen to them and not kick them and not yell at them and say, but I'm doing this damn thing for you. That's an important thing.
Yeah, I think communication is so important. And
so of course, that's hard now if you're in a divorce staff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you don't have that wife that's all supportive of you. She's going to be critical of you if you're not there. Or she's going to let it slide because she gets more time with kids. You're less influential. And she's going to let that go because it's nicer for her. I would just think that would be a lot of self-awareness of recognizing that you're not being, which is hard to do sometimes. But
yeah.
I guess you're listening to a podcast like this, but you just sit there and really...
I can't imagine, and I just feel so deeply for the divorced dads and the divorced moms, and even hearing, like, thinking about...
Well, you grew up in it, sort of.
Right.
So it's not like it's end of the world thing. It's just it's so much less. This lifestyle that we both are enjoying is so nice.
Right.
It's heartbreaking for us to imagine half the possible time with our kids.
Totally, yeah. Or getting a week of every other weekend and that's it. Like knowing that I've been told that I only have X amount of time with my kids.
Even if it's 50-50 custody.
Totally, yes.
It's so totally different. And say no, we grew up in it.
Right.
But
having the perspective of a child rather than a father is like, oh, my heart breaks in this totally different way. I don't know if I can really speak to. Well, I think from a son that comes from divorced parents, and this is so cliche, but kids spell love TIME. And so
that's a mantra.
Totally. Yeah.
Time. Yeah. Quality. Quantity. Time. Be there.
Yeah.
Be present.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big one.
Yeah. Communication is, I think, the key for my family in order to avoid ongoing arguments, expectations. I mean, I've heard you don't know what your expectations are until they're not met.
Yeah.
And so.
So you put it out there, even though it may be a vulnerable subject.
Yeah.
Or whatever, uncomfortable, mm-hmm. whatever. But you're not, like you said, you're not developing expectations in your head. You're not arguing for your spouse. They can actually argue for themselves and how they're feeling.
Yeah.
Not just assume. I agree with you.
And I would maybe one of the last things that was one of the best things for our marriage at the beginning. This can be for divorced families as well. But oftentimes when we're dealing with the situation, we put the situation in the center of the table, and then we oftentimes sit across the table from each other and argue about or about the situation, whatever it is. You and I, we're not the issue. The issue is the issue. And so the idea should be we come and sit on the same side of the table and then approach the issue so that we are a united front. And then we can attack the issue.
How do we solve this problem?
Yeah, rather than how do we fight each other. Yeah,
about this problem.
Yeah, how do we? Yeah,
that's like the youth.
It's not a hostage negotiation. This is we're parents. I'm a dad. Your mom. Whatever. And we want to figure out this situation together. And I think you can do that as a divorced couple. I think you can do for a divorced family.
And right in that communication sequence, I will sit there and say it's not that we sit down on the same side of the table and it's going to get solved right then and there. Sometimes it's just everyone voicing their thing, not being in agreement, just being able to hear it for a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's been out there. You can come back to it.
Yes. And actually, so on the World Race, that mission trip we went to, they had something called feedback. And so we would sit down every night and basically give each other feedback. But whatever the feedback was, you weren't allowed to respond to it beyond saying thank you for 24 hours. Now, I don't know if that's super healthy, but it forced you to marinate in the feedback. And then 24 hours later, you were able to come back and say, hey.
There might be something good. C-12 did a similar thing. Like a business owner could present a problem.
Right.
And then you would go around the room. And I like their structure because their structure, you can only ask a question for clarity.
Convene does that too.
Yeah. And that, so it's a really smart way for them. And then that person's not like answering right away and combating. Like everyone's kind of like more intellectual approach to it. I'm just like, all right, let's really assess what's going on here.
That's what Convene does. It's called the opportunity challenge, where someone presents a challenge opportunity within their business, personal life. Everyone goes around, asks questions. Then from there, after that, we dive into the Word of God. We see what Scripture says. We see the new verses come to mind. And then after all of that, when everyone's kind of chomping at the bit to finally say something, then we offer solutions and wisdom.
There's danger for me because I just want to be like,
yeah, I know. We have 16 people around the table who are all business owners who are all about fixing problems all the time. Have them shut up for 15 minutes. Yeah. It's hard.
That's a good tip for your marriage.
That's clarifying questions. All of that being said, clear communications, clear expectations is a key to health within your marriage, within your relationship with your kids.
100% dad, podcast interviews with dads with a tattooed husband, John Eastman.
That's it.
Nice. Pretty good.
Yeah, it's awesome.